What did I do with mine? Excuse me. Sorry. I'm going to call the meeting to order while we have a quorum. And thank you, audience members, for being here. Stephanie, could you do the roll call?
Tom Moore.
Here.
Judy O'Connor.
Here.
Joe Omoosagie. Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson. Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Ann Robin.
Here.
Margaret White. Susan Fowler.
Here. We traditionally have a few minutes for citizen input, public participation. Wanted to check and see if we had that today. Okay, seeing that no one is coming forward, I'd like to move on to approval of the agenda. And I also would like to amend the agenda and move under new business items B and C in front of A. We do have Alex Campbell here to present, and so I'm proposing to move B and C if we can do them without it taking a great deal of time and while we have a full quorum. So because of the importance of Alex's presentation and the need to move on these two budget items, I don't have any comments today. I'm glad that there are six of us here, and I appreciate it. And so I'd like to move immediately to the Promise Healthcare Psychiatry request, which is on page 204. Thank you. Oh, do we need to approve the agenda? I'm sorry. Just, it's Summers. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you.
Also, because this is such a big board packet, I brought post-it notes if that's helpful to anyone. So.
Okay, so we're on page 246, and I thought I would ask Mark to briefly present the request from Promise Healthcare.
Yes, this was something that came up rather quickly, it actually was something we learned about just after our allocation, got a fair amount of detail right after our allocation decisions were made in May, but it is an opportunity. The need for access to child psychiatry is something that comes up fairly regularly, and it's something that I think Promise Healthcare is excited about having the opportunity. Nancy Greenwald, the executive director from Promise Healthcare, is present if we have questions for the agency. We are being asked to provide about $20,000 in support. They project being able to bill for the majority of the costs. However, there are some support services that they don't think would be covered and are asking the Mental Health Board to provide that support. I'm not sure. I don't believe without the support that the project would go forward at this point. We did talk to them about other potential local providers, but they have a number of initiatives going on, new initiatives, and they've approached United Way on another initiative, and this being one related to mental health brought this to mental health.
Okay. Open it for questions. Hearing no questions, do I have a motion? Ann? Okay. Do you mind just reading the motion?
It's motion to authorize the executive director to issue an amendment to the Promise Healthcare Mental Health Services with Promise contract, decreasing the contract maximum by $20,250 to support the expansion of psychiatric services to include pediatric psychiatry one half
day per week. Sorry.
Second? Okay, Tom seconded. Discussion. Yes, Julian.
I'm quite fond of this.
I'm going to turn it on.
I'm quite fond of Promise Healthcare. I think they do a great job. So I'm going to support it. But I just want to go on record of saying that I think it's absolutely shameful that neither the state nor any of the local providers are willing to support psychiatric services for people other than private paying clients. I think I don't know what to call it. It's deeply disappointing to me. And I think that the Mental Health Board should recognize that this is wrong. And we ought to somehow engage in some sort of advocacy about this. You know, we're going to be asked to continue this into the future. We're already supporting psychiatric services in a way that it's just shameful that we're dependent on local county funds to have access to that so basic mental health service. That's it. I just want to go on record as saying that, even though I'm going to vote for it, because I feel like we need to do it.
I second that.
It seems to me what Julian is talking about, the fact that we are there as like the safety net allows everybody else to, ignore their particular responsibility, even if their responsibility isn't to cover the full thing, but they're not expected to pick up the slack in any particular fashion. So without us, there's a whole bunch of people that don't get these kinds of services, and it is their responsibility to provide those kinds of services, whether they believe it or not. So.
Any other comments? Okay, then let's proceed with the vote. And it's a roll call because of the funding.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Omoasagie?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Second item that I would like us to consider before we move into Alex's presentation is the funding request from, or the proposal for continuing the evaluation practice and process that we began 4 years ago to assist the agencies in determining whether or not they're producing reasonable outcomes based upon their funding. And so, Mark prepared this decision memorandum, and I'll ask Mark if he'll briefly review it, and then we can discuss.
As Dr. Fowler said, we have had a evaluation capacity building contract with Drs. Aber and Allen through the University of Illinois for the last several years. It has provided a range of services and support to mental health board funded programs over that period of time. Each of the years, the last 2 years, has included 4 targeted programs where they've gotten intensive support through this contract to develop their evaluation capacity. Those programs, just to refresh everyone's memory, the results of, we will get a report on the activity for 2018. But in 2018, they worked with Dreamhouse, Courage Connection, GROW, the GROW Peer Support Program, and then the Regional Planning Commission's Youth Assessment Center program to strengthen their evaluation capacity. They've also provided additional activity that was open to all mental health board funded programs that included logic model workshops so that they could connect what their desired outcomes are with the services they're providing. And then in addition to those logic model workshops, also providing a consultation bank where individual programs can continue to get support as a follow-up to their work on the logic model or just other aspects of their evaluation process. In 2017, and it was a long time ago, almost nine, 10 months ago, but there was an evaluation report that was presented to the board, and that included information on the Rosecrans Criminal Justice Program, Promise Healthcare's Wellness and Justice Program, Family Services Senior Counseling and Advocacy Program, and then Community Connections Connect Program. Those four programs also got intensive support in that first year, and they continued to receive support over the last year through the consultation bank. So those programs that got that intensive support the first year had a desire and a need and a desire to continue to engage with the evaluation team, and through the consultation bank have continued to receive services. And I think we can expect the same to occur in the coming year for both those programs from 2 years ago as well as the one from the from last year. So what you have before you is a proposal. It mirrors past scope of work. They are open to, if the board so chooses, to come and do evaluation policy work or evaluation, maybe a study session or something on evaluation policy or evaluation methodology, whatever the board would have an interest in. And then in terms of cost, the cost is about the same as it was last year, which is a little over $50,000. And this is an expense that is budgeted through the professional fees and consultation line of the board's budget.
Questions for Mark before we...
Yes. Mark, I wasn't on the board when this was originally started, so this is for year four, but I wonder what the original vision is after year four. Is this going to continue in some way? I mean, or because there will be new agencies who need things. And I think I asked a year ago about the consultation bank, I mean, how that's going to continue. So, of course, they wouldn't have to do some of the same year one and year two things again. But what do you see in terms of past this year four?
I think that's a very good question. It's an open question. I think that actually was probably part of the discussion we had we actually have an evaluation committee. Dr. Rappaport and Dr. Moore both serve on that, as well as Lynn and myself, and then the U of I evaluation team. That, I think, was a question that was raised, and I think that was part of the discussion about the prospect of holding a study session with the board about, evaluation policy and what is the direction, which is what you're asking, that the board would like to take in that regard. Does it involve a continuation of this type of support to agencies? Does it involve an investment directly with agencies so that they can purchase evaluation or develop their own approach to evaluation separate from our investment in program services, that we also have a specific amount of funds set aside for evaluation? Or does it involve some other commitment through the board to evaluation? So
some expectation of a follow-up in a plan after year four?
Yes. It's just a question of whether the board would prefer to continue this arrangement or take it in a different direction.
Okay, thank
so.
Any other questions for Mark? Motion to authorize the executive director to execute a contract
with the University of Illinois in the amount of $53,335 to implement the scope of work presented in capacity building evaluation year 4 proposal. I think we've gotten a lot of bang for our buck from these people, and I speak to approving the motion.
And just, just a short comment. This is a wonderful service that we are providing to the mental health community. I'm really proud of this board for providing this kind of assistance. And this is what's developed, as I think it'll become maybe a little more clear within the next time they make their presentation. What's developed is a resource that programs and organizations are taking advantage of that's less about convincing somebody that they're doing great work like us, but more like how do you use evaluation to know what you're doing and improve within the context of your own organization. So it's a non-threatening but totally helpful sort of service. And those organizations that have taken advantage of it so far, I think, are really benefiting from it. And I think it's something that this board can be really proud of, because it's hard to provide this kind of thing without having some kind of vision. So I'm appreciative to the staff and also the other board members for offering this to the community.
This is more of just a logistical question. The research assistant, is that like full-time?
Yes, and the research assistant that we that is, there's actually two, I believe, but they have one, Hope Holland, who has been with the program, been participating and providing this work for the last 2 years, 3 years. I guess I think she started when we started this initiative. Yes, she did. And she's a PhD candidate, and it will continue this work at least for another year. And then they have another PhD candidate that just started this past year and has a specific interest in this work and is expected to continue.
Thanks.
Just from my university background, I think it's 50% appointment.
Yeah, it's a standard appointment for a graduate student.
Yeah.
It's considered 50% in terms of payment, right. But graduate students don't work 50%.
Right.
It's, the answer is the one that Mark gave you in terms of reality. In terms of budget, it's the one.
Okay, any other discussion? Seeing none, could you make the roll call, please?
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Omoosage?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. We will go back now
to new business item A. And with that, I would like to thank Alex Campbell from EMK Consulting for coming back to present results from the online needs assessment that was initiated last fall by the staff to determine future directions. So, Alex, please.
Thank you, Susan. As you can see on the monitors, an outline of what I'm going to speak to tonight, and that is that if I had a summary agenda or a summary of the agenda I'm going to go through, it's that we'll identify, and you already know this, the community needs assessment survey documents that have been the deliverable out of this project. The methodology, much of which you already know through a briefing memo that was submitted, but I'd be glad to touch on that. Then the other aspects are the survey results, the details that how we put that together, Maybe more importantly for this discussion is the summary we did of those details for purposes of getting the ball rolling. The next step, I'll describe a little bit the executive summary, which is going to be a follow-up to this effort in terms of starting to then draw some conclusions around all of this raw data. So, to that end, as you know, the brief memorandum, I believe everyone has seen that one, but that was explaining the basic aspects of putting this survey on. It started on October 24th. It ended January 31st. We had two aspects to it. One was to complete it online. The other was on paper, from which we took and then entered into the system so that we had a consolidated data base. What we did was, because of the number of questions and because we didn't want to hamper the freedom of answering the questions that they wanted to answer, we didn't make any questions required. So it was wide open for that purpose. So to that end, and I'll show this in a second, we had a number of surveys that were started online where if any questions were answered, it was only a couple. And so part of my work was to take the over 200 started surveys that weren't completed and to look to see how many of those surveys were substantially completed. So somewhat arbitrary, but the idea was that we get through some of those more important questions of were you diagnosed, were you assessed, what were the services you received, what are the barriers, what services didn't you receive. And so those that were partially completed that contained answers to those questions we regard as completed as part of our calculating the number of respondents. The objective then was to solicit responses on persons' experience within the system, access to services, and gaps in services. It's all anonymous. The promotion activity that's in the brief memo, I certainly can go through it if you like, but there was quite a bit of effort by the team to promote and seek responses. The deliverable, and actually I'm going to add to this, is that from the team standpoint is to deliver a plan to each of the two boards this fall, you know, in terms of what does this mean and what is the action to take based on that. I'm going to add to that is an interim deliverable, which is this executive summary I alluded to before, which is to take the data that we have and start to put some relationship to that. Specifically, it's even within a particular survey, whether it's a consumer survey, caregiver survey, what is the relationship of some of those questions to each other? And then across surveys as well, what are some themes that are emerging to either validate programs you already have or maybe give some sense of some thinking about some new plans going forward? With respect to the addenda, and that's all the details, and I don't know how much you want me to get into that, but the idea is that it's there, and it's there.
In their packet, which I don't think you have a paper copy of it. That's pages 60 through 245. That's all raw data. So, like, if you look at the pieces before 60, this is the summary that you're going to be talking about now. But we wanted to make sure everyone had access to all the data.
And it may be along the way that, we'll look at a couple of the summary summary reports that were done. And part of what we'll be looking at is, so what was the highest item that was responded to, for instance? And a lot of these questions, and I'll go through the nature of them quickly, but it may be select all that apply, you know, under a particular category, such as what services do you receive. But all that list of services that the team came up with that was in the survey, you might want to go to the detail as an example to say, well, what services weren't checked, you know, in terms of services received, services not available but needed, that kind of thing. But sticking with the summary part of this, I'm showing up here on the screen that just to give a quick sense that altogether there were 25 consumer, 39 caregiver, 59 provider, and 20 stakeholder completed surveys. So when you see statistics, it's based on that number of responding to a particular part of the survey. Yes.
I just wondered if you could comment on what you think about the sample size with respect to this sort of a survey, and maybe you have enough contextual experience to help me interpret what looks to me like a relatively small sample size, which I was a little surprised by. So I'd be curious of how you think we should think about that.
Well, it was smaller than I thought it might be, you know, particularly on the consumer side. The what I have experienced with other boards that I've done this for is that fairly similar results in terms of the number of respondents relative to the number that are served in the community. So is it a true statistical type of approach where you can take plus or minus 3% and run with it? This is more providing than tendencies and what have you in terms of what can we draw from what there is to be said. And that's why the relationship of the different questions within a survey, across surveys, becomes even more important. Is there a theme that's emerging? Does a consumer or the consumer set comment on barriers? And how does that compare with caregivers commenting on barriers? Or how does that compare with providers saying, these are services we made available? So it tends to be more on the tendency side than it is the, you know, kind of the true statistical side. So with respect to the consumer, and I'm just going to go through this to give you a flavor, I had tried to mix the way the responses were displayed, you know, for each question, so as not to have you fall asleep after the third question in the second survey kind of thing. So in some cases, I'll just do a table, which was the case here. Have you been told you have a mental health diagnosis? 24, yes, that's 96%. Same thing with what mental health services, of course, I tell, what mental health services are you used, have you used or getting? And what I would do is then take that in this particular case, this table shows that psychiatry was chosen by 80% of the respondents. Therapy or counseling, 72%, and so on. What we did throughout was to, in addition to highlighting kind of those responses that were the most responded to, so to speak, all of the comments, now some questions have if yes, please describe, if other, please describe. Also, we have open-ended questions where it's purely comment. All of the comments in the survey summary are complete and verbatim for what we receive from the respondents. So there's no editing on that. And so as we go through this, the statistics in and of themselves have some, you know, meaningfulness. Those comments have a lot of a lot of you know, context and substance to them as well. So we made sure that we weren't at all limiting those being displayed in the summary report. Where I had tables or just displaying certain aspects such as only two options had more than two persons responding, I would note what those options were. To the extent, break it up a little bit, I would put in some graphs, tables, text. And here's an example then that I have on the screen of all of the comments then verbatim. You'll notice in some cases, actually not so much in this particular example, where if it's a one-line comment, I might group them together. It'll be clear that they're, you know, individual comments just to try to save space. But here's a case where, you know, we looked at based on your experience, is there a service need or gap which you would like to tell us about? We can go back and also then look, as part of this executive summary I'll be doing in the next couple of weeks, going back and looking then at what are barriers that they're also identifying and starting to look at the relationship of comments to other questions and the responses to those questions. caregiver much the same way in terms of presentation and format. What we're going to do as part of that executive summary then is to take, for instance, what barriers do you face in trying to get services? This is from the caregiver standpoint. And then let's look at it from the consumer standpoint as well. Are there some common themes with respect to that? Yes.
I actually filled this out as a caregiver on the DD part, and because I am. And one of the questions that just occurred to me is, and maybe you're going to talk about this, you know, when you do your summaries, but on the macro level, when you do these kinds of surveys, are there known biases, like, for example, do dissatisfied people tend to fill them out more than satisfied? Are there things like that that figure into this or no?
I'm sure there's some biases, I would imagine.
But I was just wondering if, like, everybody who does these knows that, you know.
Oh.
No, you didn't. Okay.
No, I don't think so. So I'm just, I don't know how beneficial it is for me to go through each of the surveys, but what we did want to provide was, this is kind of the format that each survey has. The idea was to highlight those answers or responses that were responded to by a majority of the respondents. Again, the details are there in case you want to go look at, as an example, what items weren't checked that were available to be checked. Sometimes those are indicative of, issues important information to be aware of.
Were there any results on the mental health side that particularly struck you, whether they were from the provider, the stakeholder, or the consumer?
Not that I was particularly surprised at, to be honest with you.
Okay.
If we were to look at, for instance, what barriers do you face, when trying to get services? And we found this actually on the consumer side as well. For example, having to wait too many days to get services was, here I put the response before the question, so to speak, or the option. But what we did was kind of categorize then that for each of these response types, what was the tendency, and we found that they have to wait. Too many days to get services was also prominent on the consumer side as well. Don't believe services will help, can't pay for services. You look at that in the context of insurance. Don't think the service provider meets their needs. So there wasn't anything in particular that stood out to me. It was to a great extent what I've experienced in other surveys as well.
This is a question for Mark and or Lynn, whichever. Is there anyone else in the county that's doing this kind of community survey that you know of? You're not familiar with?
Well, Public Health does as part of their iPlan, does a community survey.
Okay.
And they just got done with that process in the last year.
Okay.
And they, I think they had about 600 people respond.
Okay.
But one of the things they did was they went out, if I'm recalling this correctly, they went out into the community and every third person that walked into a gas station in Homer, they asked if they wanted to take the survey. I think they have done this. I think that was the third time that they've done the survey, and that this past year was the first time that they had had that high of a response rate. Okay.
The only reason I'm asking is I remember when Daniel McCullum was mayor, there used to be a report at the end of the year, almost like the state of Champaign County, and some of these issues were in here. And I'm asking, given that we have a low response rate, if there are other surveys around, we might want to compare and see how are we looking in relationship to what somebody else had done, and see if there's some similarities or not. And also for Mr. Campbell, Mark has already suggested one. Do you have any ideas of how to increase that sample size?
On the consumer side, actually a process not too unlike he was describing that the county was doing was, and in fact, I think this was done in part, that some paper surveys were left with providers, you know, and what whether the, I don't know what the setup was in terms of the providers then trying to make sure that, or try to encourage, you know, their clients to fill them out. But that, I think that's the grassroots approach that would probably be the most effective, is getting to where they are and in collaboration then, of course, with others to encourage them to fill that out.
I expected a higher response rate myself.
For context, for me, this is huge. This is a gold mine because, you know, the places that I get information from are so specific and so few. They tend to be people who are very unhappy about services and people that I know personally. So that's, you know, probably a tenth of of this crowd. And, you know, so their information is very important, but it's really small. And these are also people who are hard to find. It's hard to schedule a meeting that people living with a condition or taking care of someone can attend or even watch if it's live streamed for them. It's hard for people to find time to fill out a survey or to have a conversation. So I felt like especially the comments were really rich and really helpful and expand my access to what people's experiences are, at least. I think everybody here is connected to people who have needs from the service system and who have comments on the gaps and the strengths. But I thought this was reaching people we might never have access to.
I'm just going to jump in one last time here. I mentioned the public health's iPlan. Their results, their top three issues that they identified were, one was mental health services, access to mental health, and there's a number of subcategories to that, but then community violence, and then healthy lifestyles, specifically. The healthy lifestyles, specifically, I think it's obesity. So I think two of the three priorities that they identified are issues that this board has obviously mental health, a significant investment in, but we've also made an investment in addressing community violence. But we can, and that is one of the iPlan data is supplemental information that I think Lynn and I intend to be looking at. I'm one amongst many other sources of information that we'll be looking at as we prepare the three-year plan and supporting needs assessment.
For a subset, we get annually a report from the Regional Planning Commission about pretty lengthy interviews that they have with people who have developmental disabilities, and they need to meet with them once a year, so they ask them and their family members. You know, there is some overlap in these questions, and, you know, some of what we were doing with this survey was also sort of intentionally communicating out to people. For example, in the DD consumer survey, the first question is, do you have a DD? The second one is, do you live in Champaign County? And the third one is, what is important to you? So another thing I hoped to accomplish with the surveys was to kind of communicate out to people that it matters what's important to you. We didn't have very many respondents who have DDs, but so hopefully the information that we get from the RPC each year can help us fill in that blank.
Any other questions for Alex? I know it's a lot of information to contain without a summary, but one is coming. Kyle?
For promotion, it makes reference to postcards. What is? Could you explain what that means?
It started October 24th with an event.
Yeah. We had postcards, flyers.
I guess my question was, is this being mailed?
They were not
postcards.
They were handed out.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I just
They were not mailed out.
Do you remember, we had an expo fest?
We had a little music festival because we moved the expo from October to April after all these years, hoping that people could keep track of us. We had a little miniature expo event in October, and that's where we launched those cards. And they kind of had the website name really big, and then we used the cards later for more specific work, like through our networks, especially agency support.
But that would suggest that if we were to do this again or repeat the survey on some kind of 3-4 year basis, that maybe doing it at the Disability Expo, where you've got more of a captive audience, could increase the participation.
I liked giving it to the taxpayers, too. We had.
We made sure the front desk had them and that people were seeing them, too, because a lot of people come here to pay taxes. I don't know if you knew that.
Alex, anything else that you'd like to add?
Just confirming that within 3 weeks, I'll be presenting that executive summary on the relationship of the data and going over it with Mark and Lynn.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the work you've done so far and the work that you will continue to do. We appreciate it. Absolutely. And thanks for being patient. Okay. So we can then move on with new business to D, which is on page 254, the anti-stigma community event. And that decision memorandum was put together by Lynn. Lynn, do you want to present it?
It's really, I think that you made a decision about the 2018 event in January, right? So it feels like we just saw this and just talked. Maybe it was earlier in the year, but this memo is not very changed. I updated the amounts of the contributions that we have to offset that initial expense. We had a little bit more money this year to offset the initial expense of the sponsorship. We have some new members of the Alliance itself, but so that part is nice because every member has a different perspective on what's important in anti-stigma work. So Chandra has been learning from the new members, new directions that we could take it. And then, you know, we also had the big art show, and it was really fun. And I think the artists were very pleased. Everybody sold something. They usually do. But I think part of the fun is just having some positive attention that's not about disability. It's about, like, beautiful things they've made and being able to visit with each other. So that's always my favorite part. Anyway, not much has changed over since the last time you saw this request, just some of the details about who the members are and then the amount of money that was offset. So.
Have a motion. Tom, do you want to read the motion?
You
get to read it.
Yeah. You should be the only one reading it.
For the record.
Motion to approve up to $15,000 for sponsorship of an anti-stigma film at the 2019 Roger Ebert Film Festival.
Second.
Seconded by Pat and by Ann.
Okay.
Discussion?
The $15,000 plus the offset that will cover the full cost?
The offset reduced, so
we just pay the first bill, and then we have some revenue to offset it. So I might have misstated. I'm sorry. So your total cost this year was less than $11,000. It was what? I can't do the math that fast.
So the most that it would be is $15,000, but because of the offsets, it often reduces by another $4,000,
$5,000. It's $8,000. It's like very nice this year. Yeah.
What I wasn't sure was our $15,000.
No. The film sponsorship itself is $15,000. So then everything that we're collecting after that is just reducing your net cost. So it's whatever, 8.5. So that was a good year. I think some years it's actually been less, it's cost even less in the end. But I was happy with that. So.
Just to comment, I'm really happy that we were able to reduce the amount of money that we spend on Ebert Fest so that it isn't such a substantial portion of the budget, yet we're still able to support the community and anti-stigma. So, good work.
Discussion?
Hearing none.
No, I just have one other thing to say. I think, you know, when you're doing evaluation, it's hard to evaluate something like anti-stigma work. And it would be interesting if some brainy person would figure out a way to do it. But just subjectively over the years, my very strong feeling is that this has been a big plus for our community and that other communities would do well to follow suit with some kind of an event of this nature. And this last year, the panel discussion on Friday morning that was the anti-stigma panel discussion was hands down the best panel discussion I have ever heard in my adult life, including the comments from the audience, which included some people that I was very surprised. I think the Ebert Fest has been the word elitist has come up, but that was far from the case of this panel discussion and audience. It was very inclusive. And the personal stories that came forward, I wish somebody had written them down because they were just amazing.
We can find that video on YouTube, and I can try to share it out to everyone because that's true. There was some stunning stuff after the... And the lady who asked that interesting question about, well, you were on the panel, who asked the question about if you could see one depiction go away, what would it be? She's actually a really pretty well-known reviewer and a daughter of some famous senator who I never, didn't know, but Nell Minow. Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
Minow?
Wasteland.
Is that?
Off on the side. Let's get back to the point.
So for elite people, like, it was really nice how she connected so truly to the point.
Okay, so any other discussion, or can we call the question?
We want to keep talking about it a little bit.
If it's to the point of voting.
Well, okay. I think that what you saw was not unrepresentative of our experiences with this. And I think you're 100% right. This has just been... So I can add one little anecdotal thing to this. A couple of years ago, I'm sorry, I wasn't able to do it the last 2 years for just personal reasons. But in the past, I'd done it. And a couple of years ago, I wrote a review of the film that we did for a professional psychology journal. And the reactions I got when in that review, I talked about this board sponsoring this kind of activity. And the responses I got were very interesting from people all over commenting on, how do we do this? Wouldn't this be great if we could do this in our community? So it's not just local, but it's possible. I think this is the kind of thing. Again, it's the kind of thing that I congratulate the staff, really, for making this happen.
I was not the only person who was unable to learn which film we were sponsoring this year, and I heard that from some other people. Well, what was the one that you guys were sponsoring? So I just want to put that out there. A little more advertising would be nice.
I'll back Elaine on that because she and I discussed that. But I have a question. I might have missed it in news. Is the Ebert Fest growing as far as attendance? I have no idea.
Well, to be honest, I didn't go to any of the movies. But the panel discussions audience is certainly growing.
Okay.
I mean, they've moved it to a bigger location, and it's maybe more available to people from the community than it used to be. But it's much bigger.
So we feel it is drawing a lot of interest into our community. Or has that ever been? I'm just curious. I don't know.
Well, I should ask Chandra because she was at our sponsored film. You probably were as well. I didn't go. But what I've noticed is that the questions after our films tend to be pretty engaged, and it's people that we don't hear from very, similar to this, like people in the community who may have had an experience that they want to share with the whole world. And it's really kind of interesting. At least the last few years, that was what I noticed, and it seemed to be more than in previous years, like people are more engaged with the topics.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Omoasage?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Moving on to item D is the Champaign County Mental Health Board and SILA budget submissions. And there are two motions. One is for the overall county budget for the Mental Health Board, which is $5 million plus. And the other is for the SILA fund budget. Lynn, can I turn this over to you to provide an overview to the board?
So this is the first round. I think it would be great if this was the final draft, but I can't be sure because I'll get more information in August from County Administrative Services about any change in the projected revenue. So I thought there might be a change in June, and there wasn't. But in August, she might give me a different projection, and she also might give me better information about personnel costs. So because they're negotiating the health insurance and there are a couple of other things that are just guesses right now, but they're great guesses. So this could be the budget that the county board looks at in November, but the first round of it is due in July, and then I'll meet with County Administrative Services to talk about what are the most important items in the budget and look at some budget narratives and are they capturing the things that are important and that communicate well in the county board budget packet. So this is where this information is ultimately going. But for you to have a budget, it'd be great if it was this one. So I thought, well, let's, take a look at the first round, and if you approve it, then we approve it. If it changes in August, you approve, or revise it then. And then again in November, if there's additional information that changes it in November, you could look at it again. So you might see it three times, but could be lucky.
And so, Lynn, it's important to have a discussion and a vote by the board at this point in time before you take it to the county, even if the funding shifts a little bit. I mean, nothing has ever shifted a huge amount. So we're basically looking at what you, staff, and Chris have carefully examined and predicted the costs would be, given the revenue that we typically receive.
And then most changes, we would just, we work with the board presidents, you know, if there are minor changes, but right now it's broad strokes.
Okay. So, Julian.
So, two things. One is, I was looking at the additional information that you provided about expenses. You don't have to bother to look at it. That's just commenting on. I congratulate you on your being so transparent and clear. This is probably the first time we've had this level of detail. Or at least I don't quite remember it as being so clear.
We had it last year.
It might have been so much the first time that it just slipped right by me. But this time, I really noticed it. And so my only question about it is it's when you have this kind of detail, it's very easy to nitpick about something. And so I was just curious of how you present it to the county board. I maybe will ask Kyle what he thinks is the best way to do it. Do you present that kind of detail? No. Good.
What I'm gonna, so after
all it
today
does is provide people with opportunities. Oh, how about that one there?
Well, after today, if I, you know, whatever I learn from this meeting tonight, I can start using tomorrow. Tomorrow I officially have to stop procrastinating on the documents that I send to the county because they use a different format. And this is in order to be in compliance with the standards set by the auditor's office. And they have a, you know, really high rating. I want to help them keep their high ratings, so I'll fully comply with the requests. But they're different. They're not looking for this kind of detail at all. They're looking for more like how your three-year plan connects with theirs, with their strategic plan and goals. So you're also not asked to approve the details in here. Those are all things that if you find something you don't like in here, we can take up an issue later. We did have a vendor who passed away, so I had to change, you know, I don't know how much it's going to cost to get this work done by a different vendor, but, you know, so like there's a level of detail there that's just not, it's not realistic to keep asking for approval for, you know, for like the name of a person. But the first two things are really important. The mental health board budget is using, this is for the most part, the categories that you used last year. Chris and I have added a couple of categories and moved some things around. He really helped me study the expo expenditures and make a prediction. We've moved the consultant costs out of professional fees and into expo, which is a new line. So there are some changes like that. But overall, this is pretty similar to what we did last year. But thank you for the comment.
A motion if we're going to discuss the actual budget itself. So do I have a motion to approve the mental health board budget? And if I do, could you please read it?
Sure.
Thank you, Ann.
Motion to approve the attached 2019 CCMHB budget with anticipated revenues and expenditures of $5,231,018.25.
Is there a second?
I second.
Judy seconded. Okay, followed by Elaine. All right, discussion. I think what this brings to mind for me is how much we do count on property taxes, because the majority of the budget is property taxes. And we're fortunate that we are able to have access to those property taxes for mental health services. That was my comment.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie? Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Moving on then to the second motion within this decision memoranda, which has to do with the SILA fund budget. Do you want to make a few comments first, Lynn, or is it pretty self-evident?
This one is actually identical to the 2018 budget because we have not looked at the last statement. So we could change this. We could adjust this based on the bank statements and what activity, or we could just leave it rolling like this. It's so small. It's such a simple budget. I mean, the only issue is that it's collecting money. So at some point, you could pay off the mortgage.
So this is related to the $50,000 a year that we pay for the supported living environments. And you said we could pay it off at some point in time, or are we paying it $50,000 a year?
At the rate of $50,000 a year per board, you're paying more than it needs. We had originally planned to purchase 4 homes, and we purchased 2, and there are lots of reasons for that. We could end up having a whole discussion at some point about changing the plan, but if you only hold 2 homes, we could pay off the note sooner than the term. So, but that's, I decided not to put anything like that into this, just leave it for later discussion.
We have the motion read and a second. Judy's going to read it. Okay, thank you.
Motion to approve the attached 2019 SILA funded budget with the anticipated revenue of $118,100 and expenditures of $94,194. Payment to this fund is consistent with the terms of the intergovernmental agreement between the CCDD board and the CCMHB board.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion. Hearing none, call the question.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. We're almost through the major portion of the agenda, and it's not 7 o'clock yet.
But this is such a big, important question right here.
All right. So, moving on to... how about the agency information and then the schedule?
That's right.
Do we have any agency information to present today? Okay. Sure. Well, 5 minutes.
I'll do it in 3.
Okay.
I've been working since February to get rid of our wait list for assessments in mental health services, and I can report to you as of the end of April, we have no wait list for mental health assessment services.
Wow.
Then my next direction, thank you. My next direction to the staff is
Rosecrans.
I'm sorry.
I don't recognize you.
Chris
Gleason,
Rosecrans.
Yourself?
Sorry. Apologize. The next thing is we're going to get down to no wait list for treatment services. We're down to 2 weeks now between assessment and getting into treatment. Prior to February, we were at 4 or 5 months. So I just wanted to give you guys an update on that because we've been working really hard to make sure we get people in quicker.
Great.
Thank you.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
You said 2 weeks from
assessment to treatment.
What was the old time?
4, 5, 6, 9 months.
Okay.
Yeah, people sat on lists forever.
Could you say something about what's different? How did you manage it?
We instituted walk-in services for assessments on the adult side. Still with kids, we're scheduling those. It's just hard for kids and families to do walk-ins. But the adult side, we started doing walk-ins. And what that did is opened up our schedule to get people in quicker for assessments that were scheduled, but also we can see a lot more people we're doing 2 days a week. I would like to get 5 days a week of walk-in assessments for mental health services. We're doing it on the substance abuse side today. We'll get there on the mental health side. I just need to adjust some of the staff. So a lot of it's just re-educating the staff and the team, and then re-educating the community. Because that was part of the reason, that's what I heard in Alex's statement too, is that people said there's no access, and they're right. So we need to change, not the community.
What kind of numbers are you talking about?
We're probably talking about 10, 12, 14 assessments a week. So I'll get you better numbers next month once we get to that portion. I'll have some more detail. But in substance abuse, we're doing about 157 assessments a month. Mental health, that's where I hope to get our mental health to.
That's fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Then moving on to the schedule.
To the really big question.
Old business.
This is old business. On the schedule, we have added a tentative study session. So we moved the September meeting off of Yom Kippur and 1 week later to September 26th. But we're also proposing that you add a study session September 12th. And it could be that you use that as a regular meeting and the 26th of the study session. And that's the month where we really would like to have the U of I evaluators come and talk about their project. So, you know, one of those dates. So anyway, that's added. And then the other thing is you probably don't need a July meeting, just given that you got through all this business.
Hallelujah.
If you want to officially cancel that, we can do that.
Do I have a motion to cancel the July meeting?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor? Aye. Okay. That makes up for two meetings in September and two in October.
Do you want to add the September meeting?
I would like to.
Okay. Yeah. For the evaluation. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
Okay. CCDB information, anything that?
They met this morning. They had two presentations, this one and a presentation about the expo. They have two board members who have served since 2004 when the referendum passed and the board was established, are retiring, so this was their last meeting.
It's Joyce Still and Mike Smith.
Joyce Still and Mike Smith. And we had the minutes from the meeting where they were appointed.
Yeah. Wow.
So cool. Yeah. So next month, they're required to meet in July, so the two new board members will be seated at their July meeting.
We have approval of the Mental Health Board minutes from 516 and 523, and those are on pages 267 for May 16th and 269, et cetera, for May 23rd. May 23rd was when we voted on the allocations to the programs. So I guess we should vote on each set of minutes independently. Have you had a chance to look at the May 16th study session minutes? Are there any corrections or changes? Do we need to take a vote, just an aye vote? Or all those in favor of accepting the minutes, vote aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Then the May 23rd minutes, which are a bit longer, as was the meeting, runs to page 275. I did have a chance to go through it, and it looked very up-to-date to me. Any corrections from? Okay. If you are willing to accept the May 23rd minutes, please indicate by voting aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Okay, passed. I'd like to just skip briefly to the financial information because that's also a voice vote, which is 305 to 313. And then we'll go back to executive director and staff reports. 305 to 313, any questions about the financial report expenditures? I would like to state that they've just become so clear and straightforward that I never have a question, and I used to, a few years ago, always have questions. Yes. Any comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the expenditures, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, accepted. All right, Lynn, back to you.
I've said too much already.
Okay, then it's staff reports? Okay. We had some great reports in the in the packet, one from Mark, one from Kim, and one from Stephanie, and Chandra. Thank you. Yes, and from Chandra. It's really helpful to have these reports, and we really appreciate how hard everyone works and the amount of work that you do. Let me open it up to any questions about reports. I have a question about how we're doing with the puns.
We have an update for you.
I was pleased that they're going to select 16, but somewhat distressed that it seems to be taking a while.
It happened.
So we learned today that 900 people statewide were selected. The letters can't go out until their addresses are verified, so we don't know who they are. The estimates for this area are 12 in Champaign County.
Okay. 16 selected in April 2017. Were they all able to complete the pass process? If they aren't, do they go to another number?
No, I think if there's a problem that's related to not being able to find service providers or the pass agency, you know, or they're not called that anymore, being able to complete the work, the client and family are not punished for that other than not getting services, which is more than enough punishment.
So if they're on the PUNS list and their name is drawn, they're likely to end up getting
services. Yes, in Illinois it could take forever. So,
Kyle? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking about Kim Bowdry's report, which is on the PUNS, the Person of Urgent Needs for Support selection process. I'm sorry. And I am glad to hear that 900 names were chosen. 12 for Champaign is less than 16 last year, so let us know what we can do.
There's a reason.
There's a funny quality to this 900 person selection, and that is that they're trying to move more people out of the ICFDDs, which are the large, you know, 16 bed and larger, more institutional residences. So that's why there are relatively few from Champaign County, because we don't have any more ICFDDs here. So this selection included a mixed group, but so many from that. And there's a reason that people ended up back in institutions, and that's because they didn't have a choice, right?
I haven't been to a board meeting yet, but I met for about an hour with Adelaide Amay at RACES, and we went over their services, the kind of four pillars of their service, and it was very useful to me. And then I'm on the list to get their board minutes, and I hope to then actually attend a board meeting soon.
I will just say I was overwhelmed when I received this in the mail.
It was heavy.
But, I mean, it was like reading a novel. I really enjoyed reading the survey. I did. I really, it made me sad, but it did open my eyes to goals that we all need to look at. And so I'm glad it was here.